junior running back Audric Estime broke one long-standing single-season program record today, and had he played one more quarter, I think he would have broken a single-game record as well. But either way, Notre Dame 56, Stanford 23. I'm Tim O'Malley. You're watching Irish Illustrated Overtime with John Bryce of Football Scoop and Irish Illustrated. And John, one more quarter, Estime would have caught up to Julius Jones. He needed 25 more yards. I think once that blocked field goal was returned for a touchdown, that probably negated any chance of Estime going back in the game.
Yeah, you could argue probably one more snap, and Audric Estime very likely could have broken the single game rushing record for Notre Dame. He does set the single season touchdown rushing record for Notre Dame, and segueing into what will be a variety of topics for us tonight, T.O., is the fact that Notre Dame had more than 300 yards offense just on its first down plays today. That's what a lot of people have wanted to see from this offense. Obviously, that's above and beyond any reasonable expectation. But that sort of dynamic capability, those big plays, they set the tone. Massive win for Notre Dame. I know that this is a bad Stanford team, but you had to position yourself to take a step forward in year two under Marcus Freeman. This win does that.
Yeah, before we get to the reason why it was 13-7 Stanford and 14-13 Notre Dame, and Notre Dame down 16-14, which was a funny score to see, 16-14 to Stanford after last year. This is what Notre Dame did on first down, as John referenced. First quarter, 6 first down snaps, 113 yards. Second quarter, 12 for 65. Third, 10 for 131, and that doesn't really get into the fourth quarter where they didn't need those first down snaps as much. They were dominant because they could run the ball. They were not dominant in the passing game, though. A couple players built on what we hoped they would from last week. Tobias Merriweather made a very competitive third down catch. Jordan Faison with a touchdown led them in receiving, although I think just 3 catches for 66 yards. And Greathouse, only 1 catch today, but another touchdown. They were crucial catches. Notre Dame really went away from Sam Hartman after a rough start. It also did not need anyone to pass the ball the way Audric Estime was running, and running through tackles today.
521 yards, T.O., on a night that the Notre Dame offense only attempted 15 passes, and only 14 of those by the starter, Sam Hartman. That is the absolute portrait of physical domination, which is absolutely what Notre Dame did at the point of attack and what it didn't take care of with the offensive line and the tight ends. And I thought even the receivers blocked well. But what those units did not take care of, Audric Estime pretty much single-handedly took care of on his own. Just really a madman-like performance in the most positive connotation of that. He ran through, around, and absolutely over people.
Yeah, 10 snaps only for Notre Dame's offense in the first quarter, and that was because there was a Sam Hartman escape where he ran for 25 yards. He looked to get some more yards. Not good ball security, though. It's knocked out. Notre Dame loses a chance for a drive there. Stanford scores. Jadarian Price fighting for extra yards on a kickoff return. He got drilled from the back. You could see it happening, too, when it came. You're wondering if he was going to fumble. He fumbled a kickoff. Those hurt because, obviously, the other team just scored in those situations when you're hitting a kickoff. So that turnover hurt. And then Sam Hartman threw a off-his-back-foot pressured pick. That was the curious one. The other ones were turnovers of effort. That was a bad play by Sam.
It was a really bad play, an unnecessary play, a throw you don't expect your veteran quarterback who's in his 6th year of college football to make, especially at that juncture of the game, and especially because there was no need for desperation. You were still chunking them in other ways. You did not have to show any semblance of panic. And as we have outlined here, T.O., when we were making our show notes for this evening's episode, despite those miscues, despite 4 turnovers, despite only 10 first quarter snaps, there never felt like there was any danger for Notre Dame. There was never a question to me which was the superior team, which was the more talented team, which was the deeper team, and which team had better prepared in all phases, really. Turnovers like that are not on the coaches. This was some player execution, but nonetheless, players overcame that and showed their superiority.
Yeah, and I thought it was interesting. There was some plays where I think it was pre-game incident analysis. Tim Priester and I mentioned, you know, there is a path for Stanford here to stay close. It's if Notre Dame has 3 turnovers and one's on a kickoff and there's an interception touchdown, and they got everything but the interception touchdown, Stanford, to stay close. As you mentioned in one of your notes, 28 plays in the second quarter compared to 10 in the first, 21 points. that knocked Stanford out of reasonable measure from coming back. As a colleague said to me, you have to eliminate the fact that Notre Dame is down 3-0 in turnovers because they just went into the half ahead by 12 points. They're going to have to go down 3-0 in turnovers in the second half to lose this game, and you didn't get the feeling that could happen. At some point, you wondered, just keep giving it to Estime until he's too tired, then give it to Jeremiah Love. And I know people want to complain because Jeremiah Love got it, but every once in a while, when Arctic Estime breaks six tackles on five consecutive runs, he's got to come out. And this time, I know there's message board angst here. I haven't looked, but I'm sure there is. Jabron Payne, three first downs rushing on third downs, including a touchdown, which fortunately was called a touchdown, not a fumble.
Yeah, and to your point about Audric, look, we know the speed of Jeremiah Love as it is, but after Audric has beaten and battered those defenders the way that he did and dragged guys downfield, that makes Love all the more explosive, all the more dynamic. So, again, Notre Dame didn't need its pass game tonight. Sam Hartman wasn't particularly sharp, in my opinion, but Notre Dame stuck to its identity, arguably better in this game than any other game this season, certainly against a Power 5 opponent, of what Marcus Freeman says he wants to be and what he wants his program to be, and that is offensive and defensive line driven. And we'll dive more into the defensive line and the pressure and aggressiveness of the defense as a whole. But this was what Marcus Freeman wants. This was the performance.
Yeah, Holden stays out. I'm glad you mentioned that for the power performers. Holden stays out with a shoulder injury. Obviously, Mitchell Evans out. Cooper Flanagan played a lot. He and Eli Raritan started. At some point, it started to look like the Syracuse game last year where Notre Dame just realized, we're just going to line up and you can't stop us. Now, I don't love going forward when you're playing Ohio State, Michigan, Clemson, those teams. The let's line up with three tight ends all the time and see if we can hammer you, because I think it's in an era now where you can spread it out a little more and give the ball to Audric Estime and Jeremiah Love, make them miss, make one tackle miss. But today it was definitely called for bully ball, and they bullied Stanford. Audric Estime had 14 touchdowns or first downs on his 25 carries. I thought it was only 12. I've added them up. It's 14. The most I've ever tracked, and I've only been doing the first down tracking for about 8 or 9 years, was 12. By Kyron Williams against North Carolina once, but 14 first downs or touchdowns, four touchdowns today. I think the last player to score four touchdowns was Brandon Wimbush in 2017 in a game. Heck of an effort, and in one of your notes, I assume it's his last in a Notre Dame uniform, and we'll get to some of the numbers left over from there, but there's a lot of threads here to Audric Estime today, but big part of it was Doak Walker award snub, and he even addressed it postgame.
Yeah, and it's really an inexcusable snub. It's also
semifinalist snub. Yeah, other people could win awards. This is a semifinalist top 10
exactly.
Running back snub.
Yeah. And I vote on a number of those awards. I'm mystified by the fact that Audric isn't still in contention for that award, especially in this season where I do think it's a little more open. Mm-hmm. Cody Schrader at Missouri has been really good, especially to have started his career as a Division II running back and now be leading or to finish the regular season as the SEC's rushing leader. And he's been nice, but he is not the running back that Audric Estime is. And Audric Estime has really battled some tough opponents. He stayed healthy despite the battering that he takes. And again, as I noted before, and I'll keep noting it because I think it's that pertinent, is that through the first month of the season, it might have even been into early October, he was the nation's leader with 600-plus rushing yards and had only played 46% of the offense's snaps at that point in time. That tells you all you need to know. That's dominant. If you can lead at this level of football at any point in the season, having played less than half of your team's offensive snaps, first of all, that tells you Dylan McCullough has assembled a really good stable of backs, but it also tells you that Audric Estime is maximizing his opportunities and really carrying this Notre Dame team. And at the end of the year, and we've got one bowl left, but in all intents and purposes, it's the end of the year. Audric Estime is my offensive MVP.
Yeah, I agree with that as well. And Estime, now we can go back. We're going to start nitpicking here, but I think Estime had 34 total carries in Notre Dame's three losses. The Louisville game got away from them. It became a non-Audric Estime game. It should never become that much of a non-Audric Estime game, but it did get away. Clemson was a strange second half because I think Marcus Freeman and Jared Parker both kind of explained it. Estime was going well, but then we lost the possession of the interception touchdown. They want to get Jeremiah Love involved. I don't have a problem with getting Jeremiah Love involved. Estime with 15 more carries, you wonder if there's one less loss in there somewhere along the way. And Ohio State's probably the one where you could think about it. If you could maintain, you have to maintain more possession for Estime to get the ball, though. There was six possessions the entire game. He had 14 carries on six possessions. It was a unique set of circumstances, I think, perhaps maybe other than the Louisville game that just got away. But Estime can, his body will probably thank him. Not sure that Notre Dame fans like that, but it's his body will probably thank him as he hits the next level here. I think it's his last game. He is 2 yards shy of Reggie Brooks, 1343, which was second all-time for one season. Vegas Ferguson, he's 106 yards shy. He would probably break that with whatever bowl opponent they get. Maybe there's a carrot you dangle. So, Audric, give us 2.5 quarters. See if you can knock it out. Then we can opt out.
You know, that's a funny point. I know you say it tongue-in-cheek. Yeah. One of the things these guys love about Dylan McCullough is, especially with no playoffs on the line and no New Year's Six, I honestly don't think Dylan McCullough would let him play in the game. He is so steadfastly loyal to his backs and so steadfast about helping them develop for the here and the later and helping them develop professionally and personally that I've spoken to enough people that I think Dylan would say, no, you're not playing and you're crazy if you try to come back. Like, that's just the way that Dylan approaches it. And I think we see that and how hard the guys run for Notre Dame, but how hard they run for their teammates and their coach.
And two comments on that. We did ask Marcus Freeman. He said he did not know that the Estime was that close to the single game record for Jones. He said he knew going in there was a shot that he could beat the single season touchdown record, which he did. And then Estime mentioned, I still think that we were told in the press conference, off the record, or not off the record, but off camera, he would not have even gone in the game had JJB not picked up that ball and scored, that he was done. I had a feeling that totally ended it no matter what, because we'd really put it out of reach. And you would have been putting him back in when he had been cold on the bench at that point too. The other thing is, I agree, Audric Estime, of all people to opt out, this is the time to do it because you're preserving your career as a running back. And I have kept saying it and said it. I love to see anybody play. Cam Hart with 3 shoulder surgeries and only back this year because of his shoulder surgery last year on senior day. That might be a guy I ask to sit out if I am Mike Mickens as well. Now, Cam Hart, I don't think he proves anything by playing in a bowl game like that, although what if you draw LSU or Tennessee, then Cam Hart shutting down somebody else at LSU or Tennessee, that could help him as well. But medically speaking, no one can get upset with Cam Hart if he were to sit out the bowl game.
No, you're right, but if it wasn't LSU and Cam Hart had a chance to lock up with a Malik Nabers or the other really good wideout for the Tigers, that would certainly be compelling. Obviously, there are subplots abound that we can deliberate later if that's the matchup that comes to happen. Certainly, it's trending that way, I think, very positively for a Notre Dame-LSU bowl game down in Florida. I don't think Tennessee can sneak up to that level at this point in time. The Vols' losses late in the season were really bad, and they doubled up Vanderbilt on Saturday, but they're still a 4-loss team. So I don't see Tennessee ascending to the top tier bowl that I think Notre Dame is going to be in, and that will be interesting if that's the matchup, Tim.
And Trey Poole asks from our comments, I was so glad to see Marcus Freeman show fire on the sideline discussion with Dylan and Audric on the play that Payne was thought to have fumbled. He was holding Audric Estime accountable for Jabron Payne's fumble. Payne is the short yardage back. He's the third down back. He was saying, there's a standard in this room. You can't let your guy fumble in that situation. And it turns out he scored before he fumbled. So it all works out for Payne. I was glad for Payne because he did a lot of dirty work successfully early during the year. And then all of a sudden he was getting those 3rd and 10 carries, which makes everybody mad because you're just not supposed to pick it up. And he wasn't getting all that close. But going through the USC game, he led Notre Dame in 3rd down conversions. People forgot that because all of a sudden he was getting disadvantageous situations to try it in.
Yeah, and early in the year, he proved himself in some tough yardage 3rd down situations, whether any of us believed he was the back that should have been in those situations or not. And again, one more point about the depth of this backfield, and we've talked about it literally together almost every single time since August that we've done a video, T.O., and that is last week we see Devin Ford score a touchdown on a great wheel route out of the backfield. Today it's Jabron Payne and Devin Ford. Was a non-factor. So, again, that speaks to the depth. That speaks to the talent that Dylan McCullough and company have assembled in Notre Dame's backfield.
Before we get to the defense, let's get a bit on the passing game. The pluses, as we said, were Faison and Greathouse scoring again, Merriweather competitive catch. You know, I had a feeling it would be hard for Flores to – if Stanford's capable of taking somebody out of a game, the one person you're going to kind of look at recently who might be surging would be Rico Flores. I'm interested to see the bowl game with – if you could have Flores, Merriweather, Greathouse, perhaps a healthy Jaden Thomas, although that might just be even more blocking like he did today. I don't – a month might give Jaden Thomas time to stretch it out with the hamstring situation. But I think it, with those three freshmen and Merriweather – Thomas back, healthy blocking, and Raritan confident. It would be a fun passing attack to see if they could grow into it. And as you said, it'll probably be a Love, Price, Payne. And it'll be a four-headed monster backfield. We'll see who gets the hot hand.
And again, to the passing attack today, or overall the lack thereof, those again, only 15 pass attempted by Notre Dame the entire game, only 14 by Sam Hartman. But those wideouts, the Chris Tyree, Jordan Faison, Tobias Merriweather, and Jaden Greathouse, they combined to catch 7 of their 10 targets. And so, again, that's maximizing their opportunities. Much like we talk about a Jabron Payne being able to maximize his opportunities, you only get 10 targets between 4 of you in a road game against a fellow Power 5 opponent, but you catch 7 of them. And, again, Tobias Merriweather specifically, I can't wait to watch it again. I'm sure you guys will pick it up on replay. He had a really nice block on one of the big gainers where he just sealed the edge and left a great alley for the back to slide up through there for a massive gain. So not a lot of balls thrown around to the wideouts today, but they still made their presence felt.
You know, it's a good point about Merriweather. I actually put the binoculars on him on a play. It was Tyree's second catch on the sideline. It's good to see Tyree get back involved too, because people forget that there was an overturned catch that he made a nice catch against Wake Forest, but you don't want to see Tyree start stacking zeros in the box. So the 2 for 44 was good. Merriweather beat press coverage quickly off the line, and it was a colleague pointed this out to me, and I think he's right. He's like, Sam Hartman's first option is not trusting Tobias Merriweather to beat somebody off the line yet. The quarterback next year is going to have that as one of their first options, because they do need Merriweather to be a better player, obviously, next year than he was this year, even though they have more talent behind him that might be better talent. But you cannot miss on Merriweather. He doesn't have to be your best receiver. Oh, because Jaden Greathouse and Flores could be their best receiver next year, and it could be Jaden Thomas again next year. Cam Williams 2 years down the line, but Tobias Merriweather can't miss completely as a player. And Notre Dame be at its best as a wide receiver unit over the next 2 years. And I think it's great to see him take some steps toward being a player that can help you every week.
And again, his close to the season, I think, makes you eager to see how he stacks these performances with bowl prep, and then if he can carry it over into the postseason as well.
Right. All right. And you made a note for us here for the defense, the aggressive defense. The defense was part of the key to this game. They gave up 16 points in the first half amid 3 turnovers. So 16 points with 3 turnovers. They were not perfect in the first half by any means. Second half, there was no points scored until garbage time by Stanford. That was it. But you had 9 tackles for loss, 7 quarterback hits, and 5 pass breakups. I tried to keep the coverage wins. I thought the defense – I mean, when you have 16 pass targets – to one player and he catches 7 balls, your defense has done a job too, because the whole key for Stanford was trying to move the ball with their quarterbacks and with a one man on the outside. And Benjamin Morris and Cam Hart combined for a couple pass breakups. I thought Ramon Henderson had his best game of the season. He hasn't had a notable season. He had a third down stop. He had a fumble recovery. The defense came to play. Once again, after they figured things out, Marcus Freeman said, and I don't know how many times it's been this year, John, maybe 5. We had never seen what they were throwing at us in the first half from an offense. And you could kind of tell with Stanford, because there were some unique plays going on there, and they fooled Notre Dame in the first half a couple times.
And I've heard some coaches through the years, Tim, talk about, oh, well, halftime adjustments can be overrated. You better put your work in through the week and all of that. And I don't think we can talk enough about the in-game halftime adjustments and beyond by Al Golden and the defensive staff this year. It's arguably the central component of Notre Dame being a 9-win team today is not only just the overall defensive excellence over the course of the season, but really the way that that group has responded when so many teams have tried to throw different things at them and so many teams have shown stuff that the Irish have not seen on film, or have been breaking in new players from the portal, or been breaking in a new coordinator, or in this case, an entire new staff at Stanford, and yet they adjust. And look, they've also performed incredibly well, even when the offense has handed the ball over and put them in bad situations. Even the Clemson game to start this month, T.O., after the muffed punt, down and around the 9-yard line or so. Notre Dame stiffened and held Clemson to a field goal that left it 10-3 early on, and Notre Dame drove right back down the field and had chances to tie the game, ultimately had to settle for a field goal. But there was another instance tonight where there was a turnover and Notre Dame didn't immediately just give up a touchdown.
Right.
That's coaching, that's belief in what you're doing, and that's executing on the field.
I want to get to that defensive drive chart in a second, but Adam B. makes a good point. It was weird getting beat for 250-yard plays tonight. He's right, and one was a bust. I don't know if it was Botello's responsibility or not. Right before the play, colleague says to me, Botello's in coverage. Botello did not seem to drop far back enough into his boundary flat. That was the 53-yarder to E.J. Smith. I think the quarterback run was a situation where when you're in Wildcat and you break free in that scrum – and take off. You can, now 51 yards is a lot, obviously, for Justin Lansom, but that is why he got away, was that situation. The other one was a bust. And the second quarter, the first quarter, there were a few too many plays where you thought, man, Stanford really has them off balance. But we thought that might happen in the first quarter, including the best play of the year, tongue in cheek. When you get down to the red zone, you know what you do. You fake reverses, John. You go down and score. Stanford did that. And I think they've been paying attention to our press conferences.
Yeah, no question about it. But again, you're right. And what this defense has done, the way it's steadied itself in the rare occasions, whether it was the second quarter last week against Wake or what was happening in the first quarter tonight, three dominant quarters in each of those games, really overall, other than those one first half slip-ups. And again, this has just been a complete team. And I would argue a complete team with some very good players, but there's not been a Foskey rushing the quarterback this year where you knew you could lean on anything. So this has been a defense that truly is the sum of its part is greater than any individual effort. And it's a defense that in a lot of ways, in my opinion, has played above its capabilities in some instances, again, because there is not that superstar player. You don't look on the field and see a Foskey breaking the sack record as he did a year ago and see a guy like JBB will play at the next level, and I think we're all intrigued to see what he does at the combine. But we saw Foskey last year and thought, this guy's going to go work out at the combine. He's had this great year. He's going to test well. He might sneak into the first round. He didn't, but he still climbed the draft boards, and I just don't think right now you see that with this Notre Dame defense beyond casting ahead to the 25 draft and knowing that Ben Morrison's going to be a first-round pick.
It was a unique day, really, on both sides for the drive chart for Stanford. They only punted twice. They had one true three and out. They had a three and out, but they had gained 23 yards on that drive before a fumble. But as Pete Sampson pointed out on Twitter, if you know Notre Dame with an interception and a blocked field goal and, of course, a fumble recovery when Jalen Snead hit and Ramon Henderson picked it up, there's also three more turnovers on downs, which is he has been preaching all year, Samson, that turnovers on downs are turnovers as well. They don't know. They die right there. Sometimes interceptions come back the other way, so that's the difference. But only two punts for Stanford, only one punt for Notre Dame. I didn't remember the punt. Tom, the intern, told me that Notre Dame punted. I could not remember that. Otherwise, it was Hartman's fumble, touchdown, touchdown, Hartman's interception, touchdown, 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 and Jelly's interception. And why I didn't remember the punt, I was walking down. Now I am vindicated. I did not see that punt. So they did punt at the end of that game.
Yeah, and it wasn't even Bryce McPherson that punted. Yeah.
No wonder I didn't notice that.
Right. Yeah, exactly. But you're right. Really a phenomenally clean performance. And as you segue us into talking about punting, let's talk a little bit more about Marty Biagi's special teams unit both tonight and throughout this season with JBB's scoop of that blocked field goal attempt and returning that for a touchdown. I believe that gives Notre Dame special teams scores in four different special teams touchdowns in four different areas from blocked punt, blocked kick, punt return, and kickoff return. So, no, there's not that nation's leading seven or eight blocked punts like it was from Brian Mason's unit a year ago, especially when it was like 5 in 4 weeks or something phenomenal. But this has been a special teams unit that has gotten progressively better and that has been a difference maker in some key games and including most significantly the USC win.
Yeah, I think fans will like to hear this comment from JJB. We spoke with JJB post game. It's similar to what Anya said last week. Anya said, you know, we watched on film and I think all special teams coordinators say this first part. He kicks really low, the Wake Forest kicker. We can block one of these. They listened. They blocked it. JJB said that Marty Biaggi told them, make sure you're on, when you're on the correct side, you're using the correct hand. Make sure you're on the right side using your left hand. Make sure you're on the right side using your other hand. Excuse me, the left side using your right hand. And he said he reminded Onye, get the correct hand up. And Onye blocked it when he picked it up and scooted. Yeah. I mean, that is some technical drill down coaching. A lot more than this guy kicks low, I think, what JJB pointed out there.
That's an incredible detail. And again, shows you the level of coaching, and it shows you that Marty Biaggi is a former kicker in college at Marshall. He takes his trade very seriously. And I would contend that sort of level of detail, preparation, and coaching is not as common as we would like to think at the Power 5 level.
I'd like to point out that Con Man 12489 has pointed out, I'm not sure if he's the first one, but he's getting credit. Off topic, but Mark Stoops is now not going to be Texas A&M's head coach against Notre Dame to start next season. And that's news now all of a sudden. it's a lot more news than the coaching carousel normally hits us with.
It's been a wild night, T.O., as we've been pursuing that story and some other openings.
Yeah, I was going to say, you got it rough tonight, huh?
at Football Scoop, and folks in Lexington late tonight, right before we were doing the show, are like, it's done, he's leaving. We wrote that all momentum was in Stoops' favor to go to Texas A&M. They had conducted a great number of interviews, as you know, but it appeared in the last 48 hours to zero in on Mark Stoops, Jed Fish at Arizona, and Jeff Traylor at UTSA. Again, they talked to a number of high-profile sitting head coaches, but that seemed to be the final trio. It looked like it was going to go Stoops' direction tonight. But A&M fans are stopping nothing short of one of their famous 12th-man pep rallies of trying to halt this move, and it appears that will be the case.
Yeah, that's still going to get weirder here in December and January. As you pointed out, too, the crunch portal. I don't know if anybody heard that last week, so I'll give you a chance to talk about it again. But the portal opening is just – the portal window is not as long this year. That affects coaching, and that affects people's decisions.
Yeah, it's an expedited carousel. It has been being an expedited carousel in recent years, but it's even more so this year because, as on the East Coast anyway, it's bled into Sunday morning, which means – the portal opens in 8 days. The portal opens Monday, December 4th. It is only a 30-day portal this time around instead of 45. There were a number of factors for that. Coaches and student-athletes, I don't think, balked at it very much. There's a belief that there's a study that shows X number of student-athletes know where they're very likely headed before they ever officially put their name into the portal.
I'm sure there is. Yeah.
But then it was, it was running into the playoffs. It was coaches in the playoffs. If they advanced, they were worried about missing out on hosting guys on official visits the weekend of the national championship game because portal guys were taking official visits elsewhere, and Kirby Smart and those guys were complaining about what they were missing recruiting by having to go play for a national championship. So the window got shrunk from 45 to 30 days. That means, December 4th through January 3rd, whatever it is exactly, it's a crunch and timing is of the essence, and the carousel will spin incredibly quickly over the next 24 to 72 hours. I mean, very, very rapidly.
Does your heart bleed for Nick Saban and Kirby Smart when they can't get James Thrash going to Louisville because they're playing for national championships? I think they're going to be okay.
That's complaining about taxes when you win the Powerball, to you.
Yeah. So I like to track during stuffs, tackles for losses, sacks during the game. Maris Leifau, a lot of this was early. He played well early, although he had a bit of a ticky-tack roughing the passer penalty, I thought. Leifau on 3rd and 9. Notre Dame gave up 2 3rd and 9 penalties for first downs on the same drive. You don't see that very often. And they didn't score on the drive. You don't see that very often. Yeah. But Leifau, tackle for loss, sack, tackle for loss, stuff. This is all pre-fourth quarter, too. JJB, half a stuff, sack, tackle for loss, and, of course, the pickup, scoop, and score. Mills had a sack early, and Mills had a fourth down stop late that I originally attributed to J.D. Bertrand. But he had another play for Riley Mills. I know we think Howard Cross is coming back, and Riley Mills might. That might be the key, along with Al Golden, to the defense next season. If you start with two grown men in the middle, you can't lose Benjamin Morrison. You're already returning that guy. And getting one linebacker back, if it could be Jack Kaiser, that's a heck of a start to your defense next year because you do have young talent as well. But young talent is great, but you have to have the grown men to lead the young talent and be rocks in the middle.
And again, as we continue to reiterate, Notre Dame will not get to the heights that it wants to go to until it no longer has to rely as much on that young talent. Everybody wants to see great young talent on the field, and certainly Rico Flores and Jaden Greathouse proved worthy and necessary this year, and Ben Morrison a year ago as a freshman All-American. Joe Alt the same, both worthy and necessary. But, yeah, you need some grown men in the interior of your defense, especially the way the game is trending, and you need that depth. And there is optimism about Howard, and then we'll continue to wait and see what happens with Riley Mills. But that'll segue us into, I think, another key point in this dominant season-ending, regular season-ending win tonight, and that is Notre Dame's offense, a combined 8 of 10 on third and fourth down conversions. The Notre Dame defense only allowing 6 for 20 on third and fourth downs. You post a bunch of 6 for 20 lines on defense, and you'll win 99 out of 100 games.
Yeah, I think the first half, Notre Dame only had three third downs because they were so good on first. Well, they had four third downs and one fourth down in the first half. That's ridiculous that you only have that and a half because they're so good on first down. It's interesting because when we were riding back, it didn't seem like Notre Dame won 56-23, but it also didn't seem like Stanford scored 23 points. So there's a lot of weirdness in this day. That's what turnovers will do for you, and turnovers in a glut like that. Look, Stanford is not a good football team. Wake Forest is not a good offensive football team. Notre Dame, I think Notre Dame fans will not be happy because of the Clemson game and lingering Louisville. But the Clemson game came when Notre Dame was playing well. That's why. Talking over myself here, but Louisville was in a rough stretch. Notre Dame was playing well by the time they got to Clemson. And that's the one you felt Notre Dame should get. I know Clemson's a very good defense, but at that point, they seemed like they had hit their peak, the Irish. So these two games just don't assuage that much. I think you're going to need a big win in the Reliant Quest Bowl.
Yeah, I think that, we noted at the outset of the show, this was a critical win for Notre Dame to position itself to be able to step forward. It's not a step forward yet, in my opinion.
Right.
Now, to the credit of this program, and we've talked about it before, for whatever reason, Marcus Freeman and company seem to have done a little bit better in 22 and certainly closed this season the same way. They tend to respond a little bit better with their backs against the wall. And after the really disappointing loss at Clemson, a game in which the Irish were favored, they win their last two games by a combined 101-30. And, yeah, they were not very good teams in Wake Forest or Stanford. You have no control of that when the schedule is set. They're both Power 5 opponents. You did what you needed to do. You showed growth. You didn't just win. You showed growth moving into your postseason. I think those are really important elements.
And one of the final two points I want to make, you mentioned that Flores and Greathouse, you know, the freshmen that developed. What you need, though, is Chase Claypool or Will Fuller on your team as the lead dog, so Rico Flores helps him out. It's not that's the problem. No one's going to do great with freshmen that they're absolutely relying on. You're stuck in that situation. You need the lead dog. You need another guy like Fink along those lines. And then you need, though, that makes a really good wide receiver core in modern era.
Yeah, we'll never know how much Salerno, Colsey, and a healthy Jaden Thomas were missed this year. Do I think it was a win? I do. I think probably the absence of those three guys, as much as they were out, especially JT and Salerno, is probably the difference in this being a 9-win regular season versus a 10-win regular season at minimum.
I think the way I look at that is it made it so you couldn't win two of the games. That's the problem, because they had no offense versus Louisville and Clemson. Obviously, Ohio State, it came down to two really good teams at that point battling. But, yeah, all right, it's about to get nuts. We're going to have opt-outs. We're going to have portal entries. I mean, I don't want to be alarming, but there's going to be more portal entries than last year because there's 60-year guys that may not come back. And there's 60-year guys that will move on with life as well, and there'll be one or two surprises. Well, there'll be more than one or two surprises, but there'll be one or two surprises through every class rank other than the current freshmen. I think Notre Dame does a good job of holding on to their current freshmen, getting them to their sophomore years where they can see where their football careers are headed versus graduation and situations like that. But I think it's going to be a very active year for Notre Dame in the portal both ways. Part of it's COVID. Part of it is just that it has to be, I think, in the modern era. And it's the old don't get too attached feeling. But it's kind of strange, I think, when you start to like a team and then you realize there's going to be people pulled from every class.
Roster flip and roster turnover is at its greatest rate ever in modern college football. Notre Dame has not been affected by that too terribly, despite the coaching transition from Brian Kelly to Marcus Freeman after the end of the 21 regular season. But I do agree with you, Tim. I think this is going to be a bit more of an active portal season or Notre Dame in both directions.
JJB, I will see. JJB, I called you. JB. JJ, we get JJB on our show. That'll be good, too. So, JB, I will see you Monday podcast about 4 o'clock with Tim Priester. We are in three different states going in different places and different countries, and things are going on right now. But we're going to try to get together for a 4 o'clock Monday wrap-up podcast before we get into some serious stuff next week, I have a feeling. And also, 238 yards. I was looking forward to covering the record-breaking runs today by our record-breaking day from Audric Estime, but I understand why he couldn't be out there, and I think it'll probably help his future. But I would have liked one more carry because, as you said, he would have had to trip for him not to break that record against Stanford.
Yeah, for sure. And, hey, you still got to see him set the single-season rushing touchdown record. So,
yes,
still a record day. Yep.
It's been Irish Illustrated Overtime. Thanks for watching. Notre Dame 56, Stanford 23. And we'll be waiting about 8 days to figure out where if Notre Dame could be in the ReliaQuest Bowl most likely, or also could be headed to Orlando. And for the first time ever, we don't want to go to San Diego on December 27th. That's just too soon. Too close to Christmas, man. I need to hit New Year's Day again.
There you go.
Thanks, JJB.